Welcome to Locus Focus. I'm Barbara Bernstein, your host for this weekly conversation about our place on the planet. For centuries, three unique pods of orcas have hunted Chinook salmon along the northwestern Pacific coast. Yet wild Chinook salmon here are increasingly scarce. The orcas are going hungry, their numbers dwindling along with their primary source of food. Extinction looms for both species. The orcas need roughly 1 million salmon a year, but where to find 1 million fish? Today we talk with writer Stephen Hawley, whose new film, Dam to Extinction, which he made with director Michael Peterson, looks at the solution to saving both the orcas and the salmon. Getting rid of four fish-killing dams 500 miles away on the largest tributary to what was once the largest Chinook-producing river on Earth. Steve, welcome back to Locus Focus.
Thank you for having me.
Well, a number of years ago, we talked about a book that you wrote called Recovering a Lost River, which is mentioned at the beginning of the movie that it was inspired by this book. And I just was curious about where you've come since you wrote that book, because that was also about taking out the Snake River dams.
The director of the film, we met because our children went to preschool together, and we both like to float rivers and fly fish, and one day we were floating down one of our favorite rivers, and I suggested to him that there's a chapter in that book that maybe we should try to bring to life in film. And, you know, lo and behold, 4 years later, Dam to Extinction is out, so...
And it's going to be showing this Friday night at the Eco Film Festival at the Hollywood Theater?
6:30 at the Hollywood Theater as part of the Eco Film Festival here in Portland.
Well, before we get into talking more about this, I'm feeling very emotional, actually. I watched your movie last night, and I cried through about half of it. And I've also been very emotional because of Friday. And so I just wanted to make a mention, and I'm sure you were, I'm not sure if you were participating here or in Hood River where you live, but I just want to say that I feel like Friday's climate strike march, and in Portland it was phenomenal. I understand that we're like 20 to 30,000 people there and millions of people around the world. And I was thinking as I was coming over to the station, this was kind of a turning point in the climate movement in the same way back in 1969, there was a moratorium and a big march in Washington, and there were a million people that came. And that was, I think, the turning point in raising the Vietnam War, the anti-Vietnam War movement, to something that became really mainstream. And I'm wondering, do you have the same sense that there's something clicked on Friday that is changing the whole conversation about climate change?
Absolutely. You know, in the age of social media, I live in Hood River. We had maybe 40 people on a street corner, which is a big deal for Hood River. You know, I'm proud of my town for doing that. But then when you started looking at the global response to what Greta Thunberg started a year ago, it's truly remarkable. And then, of course, her remarks to the UN General Assembly this morning, she knocked it out of the park. So I think you're absolutely right. It was a watershed moment. And I'm, you know, like most people who are aware of what's going on the one hand, terrified about what could happen, but on the other hand, really inspired by, you know, what's happening, particularly among our young people these days.
Well, I'm thinking about this photograph that was sent out by, I think it was 350, or one of the several climate fighting organizations that sent out a lot of responses to the march. And there was this picture of Greta at the Swedish Parliament. And she's about, 14 years old at the time, and had her little pigtails. And she looks so alone and so determined. And then to see these pictures, I mean, there were the tens of thousands, to quote Willamette Week in Portland. But there were also, I was following it all around the region because I've been spending a lot of time in different communities around the Northwest following their stories fighting frack gas projects. And there was a pretty decent turnout in Medford. And there were people protesting there were like, I think, 500 in Ashland. And then, of course, there's the millions in 250,000 in New York and the millions around the world. But some of the most stunning ones were pictures of Pacific Islanders up to their knees to waist in water, just illustrating to the rest of the world and kind of reminding me of Tahlequah, the orca who screamed to the world last summer as she was carrying her dead calf about fact that we need to listen. So let's talk about the connection between Tahlequah and that whole stunning, really disturbing story last summer that so many of us followed, and this whole issue that's been on your mind for many years about taking out those four Snake River dams.
Sure. Well, Tahlequah, of course, was is a member of the J-pod of these orcas that have evolved over their thousands of years to feed on Chinook salmon.
And they are located where?
And these three pods of whales live in the summer anyway in the greater Salish Sea, which includes Puget Sound. So you get these iconic photos of whales breaching in front of Mount Rainier and the Space Needle. That's how most people recognize who these whales are. But they're a unique population. All of their hunting strategies and what we call their language have all evolved around hunting Chinook. And Chinook populations, particularly since about 2015, have collapsed. And these whales are starving. And Telequa lost a calf, her newborn baby calf, at the end of July in 2018. And spent the next month pushing this dead calf 1,000 miles around the Salish Sea. And it was, if you don't think that animals can communicate, you should find some footage of this event. As disturbing as it is, it's very clear that, as one of the newscasters put it, this mother was on a tour of grief. And as clearly as Greta Thunberg was talking to the UN General Assembly, this mother was talking to residents of the region saying, we need to do something about this.
Actually, I feel there's a lot of parallels between Greta and Telequa. Mm-hmm. And I think that it's a very important thing for us to learn how much young people have to say to us and how much other species have to say to us. And that was one of the things. I was spending a lot of time in Tacoma last summer when she was circling around. And people were talking about hearing her cries, basically. How do we go from there? I mean, where do we go? We've heard these messages. First of all, how do we help other people understand that these are messages and that other species speak to us? And then where do we take that?
Boy, I'm thinking about somebody who's in our film, a really great author and scientist, Carl Safina. And his last book really deals with this subject, this idea that there's this barrier or a separation between animals and humans. And the whole premise of Carl's last book, which is titled Beyond Words, is really, why do we accept that? And he gives this great example, you know, why does your dog look at you when you come home and roll over and expect his belly to be scratched? Well, your dog's communicating with you. And I think animals in the wild, while they, you know, don't come over to be scratched, they're also very much capable of communicating outside their own species. And these whales, the other main character in our film is a scientist named Ken Balcom, and he spent 45 years studying these animals. And they know him, they know his boat.
Actually, tell that story about him getting lost in the fog, because that was an amazing story.
So many years ago, when there weren't as many people following these whales around, Ken was really the only one doing it. And Ken is a ex-retired Navy officer. And so he is confident in his navigation skills, but nonetheless, he was out in the Salish Sea and this thick fog rolled in. And he was making the calculations to make his way back across the Harrow Strait by compass. And suddenly, eight whales breached on each side of his boat and led him 15 miles across the Harrow Strait in the fog right to the dock at his house. So he wrote about this in a Canadian scientific journal, and had this sort of scientific vernacular. But the whole premise of that article and in subsequent conversations with him about this event is that these animals know who we are. They know who's harmful, who's helpful. They're extremely intelligent, and also they seem to have a very sharp sense of humor. They like people generally. Not in the same way that you like your best friend, but they seem to be interested in putting on a show for folks sometimes, not in the SeaWorld kind of way, but they're curious about us. I think I'm comfortable saying that. They're curious about us and even gregarious in their interactions with people.
Well, actually, the last time that I took the ferry from Port Angeles to Victoria, which was actually several years ago, and there was, it was this time of year, and the orcas were migrating, and so there were a lot of orcas passing by the boat, and it was very interesting to watch both the response of the people on the boat, who, of course, oh, there's whales, and so all these people are out watching, but then watching the whales and their relationship to the ferry, because they're very obviously used to the ferries, but they came just close enough for us to have contact, but not so close that they were going to be in danger.
They seem to probably be more aware of vessel traffic in the Sound than a lot of weekend ship captains out there anyway. They're remarkable creatures in every way.
Well, I also was thinking about, you know, this interspecial communication. I have a neighbor who's a very special woman, and she has a relationship with a coyote in Oaks Bottom. Mm-hmm. And I was walking down there with her a few months ago, and there was a coyote sighting. And when you're down in Oaks Bottom, people say, there's coyote down there, and there's different responses to it. Usually it's with a certain amount of excitement. Every so often people are scared. But the coyote was not visible. And then we saw the coyote, and we saw the coyote cross, and it kind of disappeared into the woods because there were all these people. We continued to walk away from the crowd of people, and about 5 minutes later, the coyote reappeared and just walked ahead of us on the trail for a while. This coyote's also been coming to her house and visiting her in the driveway, and it's been very interesting to see. She's got a very different relationship to the coyote than anybody else in Oaks Bottom does, and it makes me think about this way that, for instance, with Ken Balcom, yeah. Right, that he has a relationship with these whales that most of those people who go out on whale watching parties don't have.
No, his experience, that's one of the things that comes through in the film, I think, is there's a scene in the film where we go into what he calls the room, and the room contains every bit of film and footage that Ken and his Center for Whale Research has shot, beginning in the early 1960s with rolls of 35 millimeter film. And Ken keeps that door locked, and he said it's not to keep people out, it's to keep me out, because once I go in there, I'll just get lost in all the memories of my time with these creatures. So,
well, we're talking this morning with Stephen Holley, who is the writer of a film called Damned to Extinction, which is going to be showing this Friday night at the Ego Film Festival at the Hollywood Theater at 6:30. And we're going to be talking now with Jenna, who is there across the way from me, about why you need to become a member of KABU, or if you are a member, you should renew, or if you are a lapsed member, then please come back. So, Jenna, what should we be telling people about what they need to know about becoming a member of KABU?
Well, first of all, if they want to become a member of KABU, they just need to call 877-500-5266. Again, that phone number, we have volunteers waiting to take your call, is 877-500-5266. And if you can become a member today, then we have some tickets to actually the Eco Film Fest, where you can see Damned to Extinction. So give us a call. It only takes 2 minutes to become a member of KABU. Again, that's 877-500-5266. And if you're not a phone person, you can go online to kboo.fm and you can become a member there today. It's so easy. You just fill out the form there. And we're just going to put a little pill out there to all the Super Locus Focus fans. Because you're listening right now, this is obviously the type of programming you support. Show your support for Barbara's show, 877-500-5266. And, you know, I want to say that I myself am a fan of Locus Focus, just because, well, one, Barbara, amazing at interviewing, but two, I really appreciate the amount of care that she puts into her show every single week. If you're a regular listener, then you know that on Locus Focus, every single week, Barbara Bernstein brings us these amazing interviews where she challenges our view of what is it to fight for the environment, right? So many times when I talk to Barbara about, hey, what's happening on your show? What's coming up? She will just tell me about all these different fights that are happening here in the state of Oregon and how much people are not getting that message out. And that's what makes KABU so unique, is that you'll only often hear about so many of all these different activists that are out there right now, such as the Eco Film Fest, where we have Damned to Extinction, which is one type of activism. At the same time, we always hear Barbara talking about what's going on there up in Tacoma with LNG and what's happening down in Coos Bay. You know, oftentimes we say Barbara's the only one covering this. And she gets frustrated by it. She's like, why am I the only one covering this? And I'm like, well, because you're amazing, but all at the same time, you know, America.
Well, thank you, Jenna. I will say people, particularly, like at the climate strike Friday, I had some people coming up to me and thanking me for the show. Well, I want to thank you for listening, but I also want you to thank us, really, by calling 877-500-5266. You can go online to kboo.fm. I think it's like for a $5 a month membership. We basically will take $5 out of your bank account every month with your permission. And then that really helps to support KBOO. And for a $5 donation every month, you can get a pair of tickets to see Stephen and Michael Peterson's film, Damned to Extinction, at the Hollywood Theater on Friday. And so we're back now talking to Steve. I just want one more little thing, just another little pitch. Like, I'm just thinking about all the benefits that KBOO provides the community and it provides us as volunteers. And I wouldn't know you, Stephen, if it weren't for KBOO. I mean, I've met the most amazing people who come on the show, and sometimes I'm really fortunate and they only live as far away as Hood River and they come into the station. But I've known Stephen now for, I don't know how many.
At least a decade.
Yes, and we've been watching a change. We're comparing our gray and white hairs since we've known each other. But this is the kind of connectedness that KBOO brings to us as volunteers and programmers, but also to you as listeners. Because I know that people are really excited by some of the people that are able to come on the show.
I would take it a step further. There's a question that somebody asked in our film. A woman who's been watching these whales out on San Juan Island for 20 years, and she says, "I don't know what it is about these whales that makes people react the way they do, you know, very emotionally." And I think part of it is these whales live in community, right? And they're families. They're giant families. They live in community, and I think that's one of the things that we as humans admire about them is their ability to live, you know, peacefully and with one another. And KBOO, you know, for humans provides the same kind of service. We live in an age where it's more important than ever that we are able to communicate with one another, find, you know, the things we need to keep us going, the things that keep us alive and happy. And I'm a KBOO supporter and will continue to be as long as you guys are around.
Well, thanks, Stephen. And you can become a member just like Stephen is by calling 877-500-5266 or going online to kboo.fm. Well, this morning we're talking with Steve Hawley, who helped to make a movie. He's the writer and inspiration, I think, for this film called Damned to Extinction that's going to be showing at the Hollywood Theater as part of the Eco Film Festival on Friday. And he made it with director Michael Peterson, who has quite an impressive resume, I noticed. And it's a beautifully made film. And it's about a very important issue that we've been covering on the show for a long time. And I've talked with you, Steve, about this in different ways. But what I'm really interested in, what struck me so powerfully in this film, we've been talking for years and with each other and with many other people about taking out those four Snake River dams because they kill salmon, and that I've done many shows on that. But there's something about the connection with the orcas, which was really made publicly for the first time, as far as I know, last summer, that brings it home in a way. It reminds me of Friday's climate strike. It reminds me of this pivotal moment when Telequa was pushing her baby around the Salish Sea. There was a moment when people said, and the reason why the orcas are dwindling and starving is because they don't get enough fish because of those four dams. And suddenly we saw this region-wide network, this web of connections. And I just want to talk about the power of that connection and why maybe the orcas will help us to get rid of those dams to save the salmon.
Sure. You know, it was really a moment after the tragedy with Telequa that this movement went global, because there's a petition on change.org that now has 760,000 signatures calling for a removal of the four lower Snake River dams. And those signatures predominantly come from people in the region, but also people from all over the world. And that tragic event also had an international press coverage. What I think about as a filmmaker and an activist is that event, as sad as it was, also illustrated that we live in the middle of this, one of the world's richest marine ecosystems, and it's gargantuan. It goes from the continental divide in Idaho all the way out to the continental shelf, and its influence is actually beyond that, all the way out into the Gulf of Alaska. So it's a magnificent and big place, and it requires our care more than ever if we're going to continue to reap the benefits from it.
Well, one of the things that struck me from spending so much time in the Puget Sound region for the last 2 years, that I realized I'm a Columbia River person. I mean, I've been living here for almost 50 years. The Columbia River is my river, as I, in the days when I used to fly a lot, which I don't do anymore, fortunately, and we'd be, you know, flying over. I remember several times flying over the Tri-Cities area around Hanford and then watching and seeing the river. And the first time I saw the river from the air and realized it looked just like the map. You know, it was just this really, and I just would have my hearts would just start singing every time I see the river. Last summer, I started to appreciate the Salish Sea in a new way because I was spending so much time up there, and also because of all the crises about the orcas. And when the connection between the dams, in fact, the first time I heard that the reason why the orcas were the best remedy for saving the orcas was to remove those four Snake River dams. And I'm trying to think, well, why Snake River is so far over there? And then it all started coming together. And I did a show a few weeks ago about why people in the Puget Sound area are concerned about chlamamethanol, which is on the Columbia River. And I was talking with Cecile Grenez, who's an organizer with Sierra Club up there, and we started talking about how this is bringing the whole region together, and that we have the issues we have down here with salmon and with the monstrosities they want to build along the Columbia River are directly connected to what is the abuse that's going on in Puget Sound. How do we bring this web, how do we tighten this web so that we actually really connect with each other and understand how to put our struggles together?
Well, it was really a fight against the fossil fuel industry that galvanized people in Idaho against these dams. If you remember back in starting in 2010 and up through until a court decision was final in 2017, the Canadian subsidiary of Exxon, Imperial Oil, was wanting to use the Clearwater River Corridor to haul refinery mining and refining equipment up to the tar sands in Alberta. And, you know, politics in Idaho is a difficult game. It's not fiction, it's fact, but once upon a time, Idaho was a Democratic state. Now it's not. But the one thing that unites people is their loyalty to their public lands. And so when Exxon wanted to transform the Clearwater Corridor, people were united in their opposition. And when they beat the largest fossil fuel company in the world, they turned their attention to trying to figure out why Exxon was interested in using that corridor. And it was because of the transportation system that goes from Astoria to Lewiston.
And the transportation system is mainly the Columbia River.
Yeah, the Columbia, and then, you know, four dams on the Columbia and four on the Snake. And they started looking at the benefits that have never quite materialized from that system. And it's been a total shot in the arm for folks wanting to get rid of those dams. You know, you can look at the numbers. Every barge that leaves the port of Lewiston, 465 miles inland, is subsidized to the tune of about $25,000 by U.S. taxpayers.
Well, let's talk a little bit about how useless those dams are. I mean, okay. we both have our own personal experiences.
Yeah.
So let's talk first of all about the cost and what are the actual benefits that those dams provide compared to the cost.
Sure. Well, this is where it gets difficult because the agency in charge of actually furnishing the public with those costs uses some accounting methods that are rather opaque. But as nearly as we can tell, those dams produce about $200 million of electricity a year. However, those are numbers that the Bonneville Power Administration uses. If you look at the fact that that entire power system produces about twice as much energy as the region can use, you have to wonder, okay, well, where's the rest of it going? And it used to be the case that all of that power was sold south down the Western Intertie to Los Angeles and other cities in the Southwest. Well, what's happened in those places is they don't want that power anymore. They've got renewables, they've got wind, they've got solar, and more recently, they're adding battery storage. So power that used to be profitable to sell from our dams to California is no longer. And so, you know, we were discussing this before the show. You can have this conversation with somebody, some heartless person that doesn't care about salmon or whales. And in fact, you can make a cogent and compelling argument that those dams are stranded assets. And if the Bonneville Power Administration actually was acting as they claim to, as a accountable business that has to balance their own books, you'd get rid of those assets as soon as you can.
Somebody in the film, I think it's a former, maybe a former Army Corps engineer person, mm-hmm. says that if this was, if he were a CEO of this organization of Bonneville, and it was a business, it was a corporate business as opposed to being a government entity, they'd be a backhoe there taking them out in no time at all, digging out the dams.
Well, and that's really the issue the region faces. The Bonneville Power Administration was invented in the 1930s to build infrastructure, to provide low-cost power to businesses and families in an era when rural electrification wasn't happening and when corporations were, if they were going to provide electricity, they were going to gouge people. And our federal government back then recognized that was a problem, and they solved it with Bonneville. That was 80 years ago. Now Bonneville claims they're in competition. They always talk about their position compared to their competitors. Well, why do we want a federal agency competing with solar and wind and the 21st century electrical grid? It's a really backward situation. What we would want Bonneville to do, rather than competing and impeding, in fact, solar and wind and storage and a 21st century power grid, is returning to their public service component of their mission and actually facilitating these things. And I think that's where the Bonneville 2.0 is really going to be something that our policymakers and politicians in the region need to take a close look at.
Well, we're going to talk a bit more about that, including all those windmills that you can see in the Columbia River Gorge now that are competing with the hydro. But right now, we're going to take a little time to talk with Jenna, who is two studios away from me. I can barely see her over.
Hi there, Jenna.
Hey, I can see you. Great. And Patsy's head's in the middle. Just give you, this is to the listeners, get a little sense of what life is like here at KBOO. There's a lot of people's heads through glass windows. But anyway, Jenna, let's talk about why people should become members of KBOO.
Well, they should become members of KBOO today because we still have tickets for Dam to Extinction at the Eco Film Fest this Friday. You can get those tickets by becoming a member. Give us a call to become a member, 877-500-5266, or you can go online to kboo.fm. You know, it only takes a couple minutes to become a member, and guess what? Not only do you become a member of KBOO, showing your support for Locus Focus, you also get tickets to Dam to Extinction. I mean, I just listening to this, I'm like, okay, let's go. How do I get those tickets? Let's go. Because this is, you know, a film that is about, well, the Pacific Northwest, and we can never talk about it enough. And that's why you tune into Locus Focus, because these are the types of topics that Barbara brings us every single week. And I mean, Eco Film Fest this Friday, 877-500-5266, 877-500-5266. You're a fan of Locus Focus, which means, I'm guessing that means you're probably like already planning on going. So you might as well get the tickets for Dam to Extinction anyways by calling right now and not have to worry about your tickets. So 877-500-5266. Or of course, you can always go online to kboo.fm, or you can always go on to your mobile app, or maybe you're listening to your mobile app right now, and you can click on that donate button. And of course, you can always come in to KBOO. Barbara, I got a question for you.
Sure.
Tell us about, what about this film are you excited to see? Because are you going to the Eco Film Fest?
Yeah, well,
Friday?
Actually, I watched the movie last night because I have a link.
You said that you felt like the emotions.
Yeah, I cried through half of it. And in fact, and I came downstairs and I was talking to my wife and she was watching something else and she could see I was crying. She said, do you think I should go see it on Friday? I said, yeah, we're going to go on Friday. So, I mean, even though I've already seen it once, I want to see it on the big screen. And I also want to see it in community. That's the other thing.
Oh, yeah.
And this is what Stephen was talking before, because Stephen Hawley, who is one of the filmmakers, is here. That's who we're talking to today. That there's an important thing about what we do here at KBOO is that we bring together you all in community. We I think we actually demonstrate community, sometimes a little dysfunctionally, but we are there struggling, and we've been doing this for 51 years, and we seem to figure out how to get along and how to serve a larger purpose. And that's what's exciting about this film, and this was exciting about the Hollywood Theater and the Eco Film Festival and all these things that make Portland the place that we all want to live in, because there's so much community. So join that community right now by calling 877-500-5266. You can go online at kboo.fm and make a pledge for $5 a month. If you can do it, $10 a month. You'll still get tickets for the film if you double that pledge. And become a member of this really thriving, important community voice.
Yeah, think about this. Think about this. If you cry by yourself at a movie, you just feel a little crazy, but if you cry with a whole bunch of other people, you feel like you've had this shared cathartic emotional experience.
Well, actually, I will say that as I was watching the movie, and I was alone on my computer watching it, and as there's all these emotions welled up, I was remembering all the time I was spending in Tacoma last summer and all these demonstrations that we're going to and all these demonstrations. They always had the orcas on sticks when you march for climate justice in Tacoma. And so I was bringing the memories of all these community things, but I was alone, and I was thinking about what was one of the reasons I want to see it at the theater is to share this moment with, I hope, maybe not as many people as were downtown on Friday, but a lot of people. Yeah.
And radio is community too, so listen and pitch in here at KBOO.
Well, thanks, Stephen. We're talking with Stephen Hawley today, who is co-maker of a wonderful film called Dam to Extinction, about the connection between the demise of the southern resident orcas in the Salish Sea and these four salmon-killing dams up on the Snake River, and why, if we take out the dams, we might save the orcas. So we were just talking about the financial insanity of these dams. I want to talk about the reasons why they're put forward and why some of these reasons really don't pan out. So they are supposed to be creating an inland seaport in Lewiston, Idaho. And I remember when I first started learning about some salmon issues 20 years ago, and I thought, Lewiston, Idaho is bragging that it's a seaport. It's the furthest inland seaport in the world. I mean, why? And then I went to Lewiston a few years later and really asked why. How much of that has panned out? Have those four dams, which actually started going up just before I came to Oregon. I remember the last two going up in days when I used to go to Idaho for a fiddle festival, and they were building the dams up at that point. And what was promised and what has really panned out?
Well, what was promised was that Lewiston would become as prosperous and as notable a city as their neighbors to the north, Spokane, which is now 200,000 plus people, and that never happened. And in fact, if you look, there's a character in our film, Lynn Lawhey, who's a Harvard-trained historian and also a adept number cruncher. He looked at economic growth throughout the state of Idaho, and in fact, the counties where these dams sit have experienced stagnant economic growth compared to the rest of the state. And I think if you look at the reasons for that, as our economy has evolved into, I think in the state of Idaho, tourism is the second or third largest sector of the economy. Nobody wants to go take a vacation on a stagnant slackwater pond where there's maybe a few bass. And knowing, of course, as a lot of those people do, that the Snake River was once the gateway to thousands of miles of protected spawning habitat contained in about 4 million acres of wilderness in Idaho and eastern Oregon and Washington.
Well, actually, those dams are all, except for the one in Lewiston is like right on the Idaho-Washington border, but right. The rest are actually all in Washington State.
They're all in Washington State, and if you're living in Idaho, you should be very angry about the fact that your neighbor downstream is sort of blocking not only the passage of salmon, but sort of the passage of that region of Idaho into a 21st century economy, because they're living in the 1940s right now.
Well, it's an interesting drive. I've done Highway 12 a few times, and that was the road that was going to be the heavy haul corridor. And it's kind of a real contrast at first driving through the Columbia Gorge and going around the Columbia, which there's slack water and there's dams and everything, but there's still this magnificence of the landscape. And then you get to where the landscape where the dams are in, on the Snake River, and it's a whole different kind of desolation. And the ultimate desolation, I think, is Lewiston. You talk in the movie about the dreams of Lewiston, but there's some very vivid images of what Lewiston looks like now.
Yeah, so Lewiston really should be one of the most scenic and vibrant cities in the American West. It sits at the confluence of two major rivers, the Snake, as it comes out of Hell's Canyon, and the Clearwater, which drains the largest swath, or one of the largest swaths of roadless or otherwise wilderness area in the lower 48. But when they built the last of those four lower Snake River dams, the pool from after they closed the gates at Lower Granite Dam backed up into Lewiston. So to protect Lewiston from the dam that was supposed to save them, they had to build levees around two sides of the town. So there's a real kind of minimum security prison feel to Lewiston when there should be, it should be on the same page as places like Bend, Oregon, or Missoula, Montana, or even their neighbors to the south in Boise, which all these places have rivers running through the middle of them, and that's one of the reasons people like to go there. Free-flowing water attracts not only wild critters, but us tame Homo sapiens as well.
But there's such a contrast when you continue on Highway 12 and start following the Clearwater, and suddenly you are in this amazing wilderness. And again, it seems like as you go out of Lewiston, you start climbing up into the mountains. There's this kind of transition zone, and then it's really starkly different. And you mentioned in the movie about why this is such important habitat area. So let's describe what it looks like as you continue going
sure.
up north.
So as you're heading up Highway 12, and you have to remember, too, that Highway 12 wasn't even completely paved all the way through to Missoula until the late 1960s. And if you look at a map, if you're listening at home, or if you're really good at geography and can just picture this in your head, as you head east through kind of the middle of the panhandle in Idaho and head up towards the border between Idaho and Montana for a long ways to the north and south of this road, which, as I mentioned earlier, heads east towards Montana, you're bisecting several million acres of wilderness. And the main inspiration for setting this wilderness aside was by an Idaho Democrat named Frank Church, who realized that this was a salmon sanctuary and that setting these rivers aside would help ensure that there were salmon for generations to come. And you have to remember, the Columbia as a whole was once the largest Chinook producing river on the planet, and that this area that we're talking about, this wilderness area, once produced half of all those Chinook salmon. So we're talking 2 to 5 million Chinook salmon a year in the years before the dams were in. And, you know, you're probably going back to the beginning of the middle of the 19th century when we had those kind of numbers. And dams aren't the only reason that we're losing those fish, but they're certainly the main reason.
Well, what's another issue about those dams, besides the fact that they don't, okay, they haven't lived up to their economic promises. They're supposed to be providing power, electricity, but how much is actually being provided?
Well, the short answer is, if you were to shut off the power production at all four lower Snake River dams, the region would not bat an eye. And in fact, an economist that's in the film, Tony Jones, has pointed out to me that last summer they cut off for maintenance the Columbia Generating Station, which is the two nuclear reactors in eastern Washington. They produce roughly the same amount of power, at least in the springtime, as those four lower Snake River dams. Columbia Generating Station was shut off in the hottest part of the summer for a few days. The region didn't, you know, grandma's lights didn't go out, the hospital didn't have to be evacuated, nothing bad happened. And there's a million different reasons for why the power from those dams has kind of become obsolete. And if you come see the movie, you'll Find out more. Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll leave that as a cliffhanger.
Yep.
And I think Jen is out there to talk to us some more about the other cliffhanger is how are we doing?
Well, we still got a little bit to go, but we still have tickets for the Eco Film Fest to go see Damned to Extinction this Friday. So right now is a good time to give us a call, 877-500-5266. We got volunteers waiting to take your call. Again, that's 877-500-5266. And if you can come in at just $5 a month, that's $60 a year, you can get a pair of tickets, right, for you and a buddy. You can go see Damned to Extinction this Friday as a part of the Eco Film Fest here in Portland, and that is going to be at the Hollywood Theater. 877-500-5266. I mean, you're hearing all about what this film... I just gotta say that the film is making me, like, hearing about this, I'm like, this is very interesting. But also, I can see how, Barbara, how it would cause the reaction that you had, that it's, oh, this is also very, very sad. But, I mean, that's the nature of us talking about these types of issues, and what Barbara always brings to us every single Monday is to talk about the difficult things, right? It is an act of amazing resistance, unfortunately, these days, to just be talking about the environment and about where it's going. And that's why we appreciate Barbara. That's why you appreciate Barbara, and why you tune in every week. So show your support for Locust Focus today. 877-500-5266. Of course, you can always go online to kboo.fm, or if you are a person who's like, I like my smartphone, then you can always go through your mobile app and just click on that donate button. And but you might want to do it right now so that you can get those tickets to Damned to Extinction.
Right now. Let's do it right now.
Right now. 877-500-5266. You're already going this Friday, so you might as well just get your tickets now, so you don't have to go and get it on the box office or go through their website. You can just go through KBOO. 877-500-5266. Again, that phone number is 877-500-5266, or go online to kboo.fm.
Well, I think a lot about that line right now. We've been saying that a lot. We were saying that on Friday. We're going to be saying it all week about from the climate strike. We need to make change right now. A really good way to start making change is to become a member of KBOO, mm-hmm. because we are on the forefront and in the front lines of making change. And so call right now at 877-500-5266. Join these other people who are calling. You can also go online if you are phone shy, if you're at the office and you don't want anybody to know that you're becoming a member of KBOO. You can go to kboo.fm. Don't tell anybody. And there's a big thing as you open up the website. Opportunity to donate right now. So again, 877-500-5266 or kboo.fm, or come visit us at 20 Southeast 8th Avenue and see what your money goes to. You'll see it does not go to luxury accommodations, but it goes to getting out the truth. It goes to digging into the truth, and also at other times of the day playing some really fantastic music. So again, 877-500-5266. And we're talking today with Stephen Hawley, who is the co-producer and maker of a film called Damned to Extinction, about the need to take out the four Snake River dams. And that would not only just save the salmon, it'll also save the orcas in the Puget Sound and the Salish Sea. So we were talking about the lack of electricity. I want to just go a little bit more into that, because...
You mean a surplus of electricity.
Well, the lack of electricity that we get from the dams.
Sure.
I mean, I remember, and this is not new news, I remember when I was working on salmon issues and the Columbia River issues 20 years ago, and that's when I learned that the Snake River dams didn't really produce very much to begin with. So I know that Bonneville won't tell us these things, but how much do they actually produce, as far as you can tell, compared to what the Columbia River dams?
The statistic that... Bonneville Power Administration or supporters like to throw out is that Snake River dams produce enough power to light a city the size of Seattle. However, that's kind of a misleading statistic, because Seattle doesn't ever purchase any of the power that comes from those dams. If you think about the Snake River, it's a desert river basin. You know, its headwaters are up in the Grand Tetons in Wyoming. It swings south through Idaho, starts melting early in the year, and that's when those dams start producing power. So from March until early July, that's when those dams are cranking. Well, what's happening here in the region is we're experiencing springtime. So heat goes off, lights go off earlier, we're using less power. Those dams produce the bulk of their power when the region doesn't need it. And as I was mentioning earlier, it used to be the case that Bonneville had a profitable operation selling that excess power down the Western Intertie south to Los Angeles, Las Vegas, Phoenix, places like that. Those places, particularly California, have passed renewable laws and policies that mandate not only renewable power, but that a big chunk of that power be produced inside the state of California. So they're not buying what Bonneville's selling anymore. They don't. And so we in the Pacific Northwest are stuck with dams that produce about twice as much power as we need.
Well, the other thing, too, though, is that we've been increasing particularly our wind power in the gorge. And I understand that, well, somebody was just saying actually before we went on the air that there's a moratorium on more windmills in the gorge because there's no place to put them on the grid right now. The power lines are filled up.
Well, frankly, this goes to the broken economic, or I should say broken business model that the Bonneville Power Administration is following right now. They control 75% of the transmission lines in the region. We, as folks that are facing climate change and want renewable energy, want those sources to have priority to go on to that grid. However, Bonneville has to be self-financing, and they view themselves, as I said earlier, in competition with every other form of energy production in the region. So their power has priority to go on the grid, even though their power is damaging one of the greatest marine ecosystems on the planet year after year. So if we want to fix that model, we have to take away the incentive that Bonneville has to prioritize their own energy production to put on the grid. And we have to instead incentivize them to move our power grid into the 21st century with solar and wind and storage. They are not incentivized to do that right now.
Even though those windmills are right looking down at Bonneville.
Well, as Lynn Lawhey says in our movie, wind and solar have replaced the power from the lower Snake River dams six times over. Another person that's been working on this issue really closely, Jim Norton, has added up the amount of solar and wind that's in what Bonneville calls their interconnection queue. And this is not all necessarily power that's going to be built, but it's an indication of the demand for these types of renewable projects. There's 20,000 megawatts of power potentially in these proposed projects that Bonneville will need to accommodate to put onto their grid. You know, we can start having a conversation about removing more than just the four lower Snake River dams over the next 50 years.
Maybe the John Day Dam.
John Day would be, you know, next on the...
That's the next
right.
Salmon-killing
it's
dam.
Big, yeah. It's a giant fish killer. It's yeah. Another... Warms up a huge desert reservoir and kills a lot of young salmon. But this is what I think the region needs to do, is to put their heads together and come up with a 50 or 75-year plan, figure out which of these dams is actually serving the public good, and get rid of the ones that aren't.
Well, another issue that gets brought up is, well, these dams are necessary to ship... ship products up the river and down the river, and particularly wheat, which they, I guess, is the main thing that they ship. But back in 2002, I was wanting to get a ride on a tugboat for the documentary I was doing about the Columbia River, and so I contacted Tide River Barge, and I said, I'd like to take a ride up to Lewiston. And I was told, well, we don't really go up to Lewiston. It's really hard to schedule that. We don't have very many barges that go up there. We can pick you up to the Dalles, basically, was what I wound up doing. So that was an eye-opener back then. In your movie, you talk about a little bit more about what is not shipped on the river and perhaps the alternative to even using the river to ship grains.
Well, yeah, grain is really the last thing that's shipped on the Snake River dams. And there's no more logs. There's no more lumber. And in fact, because of changes in the wheat market worldwide, a lot of grain growers can see the handwriting on the wall. And in fact, the Washington grain growers have invested about $40 million of their own money in upgrading their rail facilities to get wheat out to ports that can accommodate something other than soft white wheat, which is what they grew during the Cold War to kind of use as leverage to get developing countries to align with the United States. And that again, is a relic of a different era. And now the grain markets in across the Pacific are looking for different kinds of wheat that reflect, you know, more affluent societies. They're eating different things. They don't want, you know, American Wonder Bread anymore, I guess.
Well, the other thing is that they are not shipping, I mean, they're not shipping oil anymore. And in fact, the barge that I took 20 years ago, it had one barge was carrying oil, one barge was carrying Vancouver, Washington's garbage. The other barge was empty. It was going to fill up in the Dalles with cargo wheat. So what happened to the oil and the garbage and the other things that they used to ship?
Well, a lot of it's going by rail. These unit trains that are very long, and there's some research that's come out of Washington State University that suggests that these large unit trains are as efficient, if not slightly more efficient, than hauling things by barge. So, you know, this speaks to this sort of double indemnity that we have with the fight that you've been documenting with the fossil fuels, because what's happened, of course, is listeners to the show well know, is that the railway through the Columbia has kind of become a de facto pipeline, and that fight has to continue if we're going to have those rail lines actually serve the region instead of a few select oil companies.
Well, one last thing. Let's talk about what people can do. I mean, besides seeing your movie on Friday, what can people do to get more involved in getting rid of those four dams on the Snake River?
Wow. I used to say that I don't give activist advice for the same reason I don't give dating advice, because it's really personal and generally doesn't work out very well. But in this case, you know, it's frustrating for Michael, the director of this film, and I as filmmakers, because the main thing that people say when they see the movie is that it makes them sad. And we did not set out to make a movie that makes people cry. But if you do have an emotional response to the movie or an emotional response to this issue, I would encourage you to get online, find one of the activist groups that's working to restore salmon, to give the orcas some food to eat, and get involved with them at whatever level you see fit. Every little action helps.
Well, we'll put some links on the website. I mean, off the top of my head, there's Protectors of the Salish Sea, who are walking right now from the Tacoma LNG tank down to the state capital of Washington in Olympia. They're going to be there tomorrow. Today, there's going to be a rally, if you can rush up, in front of the Department of Ecology in Lacey, Washington. And so that's one group that's doing a lot of work protecting the orcas. There's also Columbia Riverkeeper, who's been doing a lot of work, and Save Our Wild Salmon, that's based in Spokane, I think.
They're based in Seattle, but yeah, they've been working on this issue for a long time.
And there are others. So I'll do some more research tomorrow when I get back from...
I would say the other thing you could do is, if you're being served by a public utility district, or certainly if you are being served to get your power by a private utility, write them a letter and say that you would like your power grid to be updated to reflect 21st century technology and not some stranded generating assets that were conceived in the 19th century and built before the Second World War.
Well, Stephen, it's really great to talk with you, and let's do this again really soon and have more time. So we've been talking with Stephen Hawley, who is the co-filmmaker for a film called Dam to Extinction. It's going to be showing this Friday night at the Hollywood Theater as part of the Eco Film Festival at 6:30. And we're going to talk now with Jenna about what we can do to keep KBOO alive and vibrant and shaking its fist at everything we need to shake our fists at, and also keeping us weird.
Well, what I want you to do is to not just shake your fist, but I want you to then extend a finger out and then wag it around your phone and dial 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266 to become a member of KBOO today, because that's what you can do. That's how you can feel empowered in your listening. And when you're listening to Locust Focus, when you're listening as a member, it feels great. I'm just going to say that. It feels empowering. That's why I'm a member of KBOO. It's because I'm a I'm a power freak? I don't know, but I enjoy it. I called at one point, and now I'm a member of KABU. Join me.
Not only that, you're also another public affairs director at KABU. See where it goes?
So many layers. Oh, my gosh. I really, really support myself. 877-500-5266. Join those people who have already called in to support Barbara's show. I mean, it's just one of the favoritest programs here on KABU because Barbara brings us the type of interviews and brings us the type of programming that we believe in, that are the type of, well, environmental resistance. I hate to say that that's a thing, that like to talk about the environment is something controversial, but obviously it is. We have to have entire protests. We have to have, you know, children marching through the streets to say, hey, care about us. That's a radical thing. You do care about these issues. That's why you tune in every single week. Give us a call, 877-500-5266. Again, that's 877-500-5266. Or you can always go online to kboo.fm, or even the other way, you can go through the mobile app and just click on that donate button. So easy to become a member of KABU. Only takes 2 minutes. We've already had some people call in, and we got to thank them at some point. I think we've had a few people. So thank you, thank you, thank you. We don't have their names quite yet, but we have had people call in already. Join them. Maybe you can come in at that $5 a month level. Oh, hey, it's being walked over to me right now. Thank you, Jeremy. Yeah, Jeremy. I don't have the cowbell, so let's just do that. And we say, Jeremy, thank you so much for supporting Locus Focus. Join Jeremy, 877-500-5266. I've never met Jeremy, but he's a great guy. He's a great guy for donating. Join Jeremy, 877-500-5266.
Well, that's going to be our line for the next few minutes. Join Jeremy. But I want to thank everybody for listening and thanking everybody who is about to call in, and thank Jeremy for actually calling in. And you get another minute or two here to support Locus Focus. Another shout out to all you folks in Southwest Washington who I know are listening, and even for you folks around the Salish Sea who listen on the web. And so help support what we're doing down here in Portland to help your cause. Give a call at 877-500-5266. Go online at kboo.fm. Well, we've been listening to that. You've been talking today with Stephen Hawley, who is the writer of a new film called Damned to Extinction, and you've been listening to Locus Focus here on KABU Community Radio in Portland and KBFG LPFM in Seattle. If you're just tuning in and you'd like to hear what you missed, or you want your friends or family to hear the show, you can listen to it or online or download the audio, which actually I'm going to be putting up tomorrow, though it's up in a rough form right now. And to hear previous, you can listen to it on our website, kboo.fm/locus-focus. To hear previous episodes of this show or any of our other KABU public affairs programming, go to KABU FM or listen on iTunes, Google Play, or wherever you get your podcasts. Next week, we're going to talk with Eric DePlace, who's the director of the Thin Green Line at Sightline Institute. My engineer is Patsy Kohlberg. I'm Robert Bernstein. We're going to go out with some music by Marla Glenn. And don't forget to call and become a member.
Understand this, I feel that something's going on. It's time we take a break and talk a while.